Hey scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
Moncrief on News Talk.
There is a touch of doomsday about the times we're living in, and you don't have to look too hard on the internet to find people calling this the start of the apocalypse, or that this is all a sinister plot to bring some other sort of apocalypse. But such thinking has always been with us. The news of humanity's death has once again been exaggerated. John Merrick from Verso Books has been writing about this for the Boston Review, and he joins us now on News Talk. Good afternoon, John.
How you doing?
The earthquake in Lisbon in 1755, is it your contention that was, if you like, the birth of modern pessimism?
Yeah, I think that's right. So after that, you have, before that, you have the kind of great upswell of the Enlightenment. You have this incredible birth of, with the French philosophy, you have of talk of progress. And really, when confronted with that, you have the philosophy of Leibniz and so on. When confronted with that, massive disaster, kills thousands of people, reduces an entire flourishing city to ruins. It's really hard to kind of uphold that still. And this is really encapsulated in Voltaire and his great poem on the earthquake. And he basically says, after this, we can no longer say that progress is happening. We can no longer kind of hold up these great systems we've created to the reality of the world as it is. We have to look at the kind of death and devastation that's all around us. Mm. And this really is the kind of birth of modern pessimism. And, people have been pessimistic before, but not as a system. They've not systematized that. And that's a very kind of modern condition. And I think, it's really, I think that this pessimism is an offshoot. It is the kind of the obverse of progress. The two come together. So you have around the same time, as I said, birth of kind of philosophies of progress. And really it's, they are almost like mirrors of each other. That one can't exist without the other. Without progress, you can't have pessimism. And without pessimism, you can't have progress.
Because it seems, and even as you describe it in your piece, it seems to be a circular process in that you have a kind of a period of relative optimism, and you have Leibniz, who you could say is the Steven Pinker of his day, and then something terrible happens, and then you get another school of thought that says no, we need to look at existence in its terrible goodness and its awfulness.
Yeah, I think it is partly cyclical, but I would say more than that, they've. And, particularly thinking about the apocalypse, it's always been with us. It's less a cyclical process, more a kind of hiding and unveiling. It comes through at particular moments, and there's reasons why it comes through, but it's always there. It's, I think, without kind of thoughts of the end time, it's almost a hopeful thought for some people. Some people take real kind of courage from a thought for the end time. Apocalypse means, perhaps getting ahead of myself, but apocalypse means revelation. It's an opening up at the same time as it is a, kind of fearful, frightful moment as well. Mm.
Yeah, because I suppose there is a trend in popular culture of movies that depict things getting destroyed. I think New York has been destroyed countless times.
And people flock to see that.
Yeah, now another interesting thing you write about is that around the time of the Black Death, or just after the Black Death, then people were looking for scapegoats, and I suppose that there might be a similar process happening now, at least in terms of people are blaming governments for being too harsh in their lockdowns and that kind of thing, or the world's medical community is panicking.
Yeah, if you look at the kind of historical trajectory of this, it can go one of two ways, and it really depends on what can kind of take advantage of the moment. So one way it could go in that kind of hopeful direction, and the end of the world could lead to a solidifying of hopeful kind of political movements, social movements. And at the same time, it can form into this kind of like closed mentality, looking for scapegoats. I based here in London, I was the weekend I saw the anti-mask protest that happened in central London. And, it's the kind of relationship between that and some kind of conspiracy theory movements that have come out of the US, particularly around Donald Trump in the last few years. So there really is, it's not preconditioned. There isn't a determined outcome of this. It's not only that it can happen, people look for scapegoats, and in the Middle Ages after the Black Death, that that was actually a lot of that was anti-Semitic kind of repercussions. There was, you know, terrible massacres, St. Valentine's Day massacre. Thousands of kind of Jewish people were slaughtered afterwards. But it could also just as easily be kind of a hopeful movement, a movement for progress. You know, these times of crisis they're not predetermined.
Yes, indeed. Though, there, as you say, and we've had those marches as well, the anti-mask movements, for want of a better phrase, intersects with a lot of other movements, some of which are tied up with conspiracy theories. And the odd thing about conspiracy theories, as you write, I've interviewed at least three or four people prior to the end of the world. Or they're part of groups saying at the end of the world it's going to be next Tuesday, and you can never get them back on the phone afterwards. But studies seem to be that even when they get it that spectacularly wrong, they then double down on the belief.
Yeah, there was a famous study in the, I think in the 1970s, that was done by a few kind of psychologists. And they went to a group called the Seekers, I think it was in Chicago, and they studied, you know, this group of Seekers. They said the world will end precisely next Tuesday, and what will happen is the world will end and we'll be the ones safe, and we'll be saved by flying saucers. And obviously Tuesday came, nothing happened. And these people really did double down. The psychologists describe it as cognitive dissonance, this way that reality kind of reflects back on you and it doesn't reflect the thing you want it to. And they just said, well, perhaps we don't have enough followers. Perhaps we haven't, we haven't proselytized enough. We have to get more people involved in this movement. And that's what they did. They just pushed the date back 10 years and said, well, let's just go out and find more people. Maybe we just weren't serious enough about it. And it doesn't say, you know, people don't want that disconfirmation of the reality, doesn't push them to reconceive what they've thought. It actually makes them double down on it, precisely.
Mm. In that, if they can then go out with renewed vigor to recruit more people to believe what they believe, that kind of makes it true.
Exactly. That's precisely the kind of thought process that goes on there. You know, it's you see it constantly. You see this in politics as well. You know, my opinion has been disproved. Therefore, it just means that people aren't ready for it yet. You know, the good word is not ready to be heard by everyone yet. So I just have to go and say it with more confidence.
Yeah. So given the amplifying effect of the internet, what we've just been saying is quite scary then.
But potentially so. You know, I think I maybe have, and despite writing on the apocalypse and the end of the world, I may be slightly more optimistic than that. I think, you know, the internet and the kind of connective power of it also has great uses as well as being, you know, potentially disastrous. And there's something really comforting in for many people in this thought of the end of the world. In the end, you know, this, as I said, with, you know, against Leibniz, you know, Voltaire was like, with the Lisbon earthquake, we have to look at the world as it really exists. We can't create these systems which say everything is good. And maybe you had the same thing in the 1990s after the, you know, you had the end of history debates where they said, you know, liberal democracy is the greatest possible system. And then you get 2001 and you get 9/11, you get financial crisis coming after, and people can't do that anymore. And actually, there's something really kind of, there's a positive impetus which can come from that as well. People can say, actually, perhaps we do need to look at the world differently. We have to reconceive how we look at the world and change it for the better. You know, if it doesn't match up to what we think, we can intervene in the world now.
Let's hope so. John, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was John Merrick there. As I said, that essay is in the Boston Review. It's called The Angel of History.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.